This is the start of the episode, so I'm going to ask you guys, what are we going to start with?
A Wii review.
Could it be a Wii review?
Yeah, Wii review.
I want a large review. Corey, I want a large review.
No, I'm really sorry. But
why do you ask us every week what we're going to start with, and then you don't give us any options?
I honestly, I only have a Wii review today.
It's multiple choice, but there's only one choice.
Okay, what have they got to say about the Nintendo Wii then? Go on, tell us.
Very good. So this is a 5-star review called 10 out of 10. Already falling the first hurdle.
10 half stars out of 10.
So the review is one quote, I assume from an episode. I genuinely don't remember. It says, "The Lord Griffith and the Lord taketh away."
Oh, that's from the Griffith Observatory.
See, that sounds like something that one of us would say.
Yeah, I think I said that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Just to take credit for it.
There we go. That's good the review.
Good work.
That's the review.
I'm going to pat myself on the back for that.
Shall we start
it made
the
it
show?
In a review.
Let's start the show.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutford.
Hello.
Oh, hello there.
This week, we're talking about kids and napping.
Ooh, I like one of those things, and it's not kids. It's napping.
What was that sentence?
Okay, upon hearing kid and napping, your first thought is, I like one of those things.
And it's napping. I love a good nap.
Yeah, we're talking about kidnapping, actually.
I don't like that type of napping.
No, that's the one, because it's got kid in it. You just can't stand kids.
The science of kidnapping.
No, so we're talking about Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes.
Apparently so.
So, Stockholm Syndrome. Do you guys know what Stockholm Syndrome is?
It's the thing where you start to associate with the opinions of people who have kidnapped you.
Yeah, that's kind of...
Well, it's like when you start vouching for them and you like get an emotional connection with them.
Yeah.
You start getting a relationship with them and you just kind of forget that they're your kidnappers. Well, sometimes you don't know. Yeah.
Hey guys, thank you for kidnapping me. No.
You're welcome. We need you. Teach us science.
You never see my hands because they are tied behind me. Stockholm Syndrome is a psychological reaction seen in hostages and others in captive situations. So essentially, the prisoner starts to form a positive bond with their captor. They can also show sympathy for the interests and motives of the captors as well. Now, that's just if you were to ask me, Corey, what is Stockholm Syndrome? That is what I would say. There's a little more to it, which I might get into in a little bit later. But it's not registered in the DSM or the ICD. Do you guys know what the DSM is?
It's the American thing, isn't it?
Book of Psychiatric Disorders.
The one American thing, yeah.
It's the one American
thing.
So it's it's really funny. The American Psychological Association made the DSM. It's a big diagnostic. It's a big book of diagnostic criteria for different sort of mental disorders and illnesses. The ICD is from the World Health Organization. You might have heard of them, the WHO. The other WHO. Yeah,
who?
Yeah, exactly, who?
Oh, do they have doctors?
Who?
Doctor.
Yeah, who have doctors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell you what they don't have anymore.
What do they not have?
Dogs.
Did who let the dogs out?
No more dogs.
No.
Completely out of dogs.
Full of owls, though. Anyway. So... For anyone that's listening to this for the first time, they'll be like, wow, the level of humor here is like, really? It gets better, trust me.
We're underperforming. Yeah. Right
we're just
now.
Warming up. We're getting our gears turning. So the World Health Organization made the ICD. It's basically their book of diagnostic criteria, essentially. It's been around for a while. It's kind of, there's the DSM and then there's the ICD. People have criticisms of the DSM. I think there are maybe less criticisms of the ICD.
But DCM doesn't exist.
DCM? The DSM. DSM. They're all acronyms, not acronyms, initialisms, you know, whatever. Like the
DC Marvel.
DC Marvel.
People have criticisms of DC, and criticisms Marvel. Of Marvel.
But ultimately, Marvel is... No, let's not get into that.
Oh, Lord.
So yeah, the DSM, the ICD, it's not registered in either of those. So that should tell you a little something about it. And
it's not real.
No, Luke. Where would you have gotten that idea from? That's not what this is about at all.
The DSM, apparently.
So the biggest sort of case of Stockholm Syndrome, it didn't actually happen in Stockholm. So the sort of case that the media know the most about, I guess, the most popular case, is the Patty Hearst case. Have you guys heard of the Patty Hearst case?
No. Is it a bank robbery?
Well, okay, so there's a Californian newspaper heiress who was kidnapped by basically revolutionary militants in the 70s, in 1974. So apparently she became, you know, close to them and then joined them in a robbery. There was a robbery involved, but she was just kidnapped, and I assume for ransom for her newspaper money, because... Boy, right. there's some newspaper money there. And then, yeah, she joined them in a robbery.
You say joined them, do you mean they made her come along with them?
I think she participated.
Oh, really?
Well, she was caught and then given a prison sentence. So apparently, her lawyer claimed that she, because she was 19, her lawyer claimed that she'd been brainwashed and was suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, which was basically a new term that had kind of come about because because people thought that some captors sort of feelings towards oh my god, hold on,
that was really confusing, sorry, because when you said that lawyer was like she had Stockholm Syndrome, and I thought you meant that this was the story around which it became a thing.
Yeah.
And then he was just like, but your honor, she had just invented.
I made it up this very instant.
What is Stockholm Syndrome? By all means, tell me. Stockholm Syndrome had been kind of made recently to explain how some people react to their captors.
Right.
So, the reason it's called Stockholm Syndrome, can you guys guess why it's called Stockholm?
Has it got anything to do with Stockholm?
It has, yeah.
Okay.
What has it got to do with Stockholm?
Well,
there was a big case and it happened in Stockholm.
A huge case.
Wow.
The biggest suitcase you've ever seen was in Stockholm. No. Yeah, it's because of something that happened on the 23rd of August, 1973.
Ooh.
Yes, very good.
Stockholm?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. We've established that.
Yes.
I'm just checking.
We are currently in Stockholm.
Stockholm,
look,
Arizona.
It's confusing.
Actually. No,
okay.
Stockholm, Sweden.
Okay. Imagine if that was true, though.
I know, right?
We all thought it was from Sweden, but it wasn't. It's from Arizona.
No, it was actually in Arizona with Birgitta Lundblad, Elizabeth Aldgren, it's obviously in Sweden with these names. Kristen Enmark and Sven Safstrom.
I have heard about this, yes.
Yeah, so they were bank workers. Have you heard about that?
Yes.
Tell me more. Tell me more about the case.
No, yes. I've literally just heard that
they're
bank workers.
Okay, right. Well. Okay, good.
That's you didn't read any further into it.
In a bank earlier.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a bank. And the best info I find on this came from a BBC article, so I'm just going to paraphrase the sort of case from that. And basically, they were taken hostage at the Kreditbanken by 32-year-old 32-year-old Jan Erik Olsen. And then someone else came and joined them at the bank. Not another hostage, another robber.
Bad guy.
A volunteer as a hostage?
I wouldn't say another bad guy. That's very presumptive, Luke. You have no idea
I'm sorry.
Robbing a bank does not
make
you bad.
Probably going through it. He's probably got some hard times.
Yeah. I mean, he wants all of the money in a bank and he simply must have it.
Yes.
So what would you do in that situation? So it lasted for 6 days and, the four bank workers had formed a kind of positive relationship with the captors, supposedly. That's what the authorities and whatnot have had said. And so Stockholm Syndrome came about as an explanation for this reaction. So the phrase was basically apparently made by criminologist Nils Bejerot, Bejerot. I don't speak Swedish. I have no idea how you pronounce that name.
Me neither.
Bejerot. By Nils. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong as well. it was made by a psychiatrist. It doesn't matter. We're never going to talk about him again. Dr. Frank Ockbert was another psychiatrist who went on to try and basically define Stockholm Syndrome for the FBI and Scotland Yard later on in the 70s. And so he was helping the US National Task Force on Terrorism mm-hmm. and Disorder devise strategies for hostage situations. And he basically came up with the following criteria for Stockholm Syndrome. So first, people would have a sort of horrible, terrifying, scary experience that just comes out of nowhere. And the key here is that they sort of, they're like, I'm going to die. So basically, a near-death experience. They'd have a near-death experience. And then he goes on to say they then experience a type of infantilation. Effectively, they need to have permission to do anything, which makes sense. Right. You know, you can't go to the toilet, you can't eat, unless what's the hostage person that takes you hostage
your
called?
Your captor.
Yeah, your captor. Your yeah. hostager. Not, you're not the hostagee, the hostager. whatever. We're smart, I promise, honestly.
You're well, I mean, you are. You're meant to be the smart one.
Yeah.
Especially you. Meant like, to be the smart one.
I just like making jokes.
not allowed. I've told you before, Corey, not allowed. Not allowed.
So the you know, the captor obviously decides what you do and when you do it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you then latch on to small acts of kindness, like not killing you or giving you something to eat.
It's quite kind.
That's a small act of kindness.
Yeah. Very small.
What act of kindness have you done today? I didn't kill anyone.
I've killed very few people today.
Subtle but good.
In the range of zero. That's
random
quite
act
kind.
Of kindness. I didn't kill everyone. So I think I win. So, and then you feel like sort of happy that they've been nice to you in that way. Mm. And then apparently, the hostages experience, and this is a quote, hostages experience a powerful, primitive, positive feeling towards their captor. They're in denial that this is the person who put them in the situation. In their mind, they think that this is the person who is going to let them live. But then the person that said this does say that cases of Stockholm Syndrome are rare, and they are incredibly, I mean, we think about Stockholm Syndrome as being, oh, that's what happens when you get hostaged,
I literally thought that was what happens in the majority of cases. No. Where it happens over like a few days, you know?
No. It rarely happens. So we've got, they had some interviews with the people who were in the bank. And Kristen Enmark, who apparently formed the strongest relationship with the sort of the capture, said, it's some kind of a context you get into when all your values, the morals you have, change in some way. Effectively, like the whole sort of thing of this is that they're saying that they were basically kind of in a position where the captors were, in their mind, being generally quite nice to them. I think one of them had claustrophobia, so they were allowed to leave the vault with a rope around their neck so that they didn't run away.
And that was relationship.
I mean, we do it to all dogs, so don't be too shocked, James. Well,
right, look, if I'm saying I feel really, really sick in this small room, and then you're like, okay, you can leave the small room, but you have to put this rope around your neck so that you don't run away.
I'm just wondering if the person with the rope around their neck then developed a relationship or an affinity for the person holding the rope. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what's shocking to me.
Well, that's really...
Because it's better than not being
there
kept
are many
in the room
kinksters
that's scaring
that would,
you.
That would love something like that.
Maybe they liked it.
Yeah, no, you're being... So, yeah, from the...
How did you discover you had a kink for being dominated? Well,
I was in a bank robbery one time.
No, so, yeah, I mean... That's the thing. So one of them was, they said that they would shoot the hostage to prove that they were being serious. And they said to the hostage, look, we won't kill you. We'll let you get drunk first. So they were like, oh, that's nice. Mm. They're not going to kill me. That's very kind of them to not do that. And effectively, when they were talking about the authorities, this is another quote from Enmark. She said, I think you are sitting there playing checkers with our lives. I fully trust Clark and the robber. I'm not desperate. They haven't done a thing to us. On the contrary, they've been very nice. But you know, Olaf, what I'm scared of is that the police will attack and cause us to die. And this is the thing I was thinking about. Like, it kind of makes sense, I think, to be in a hostage situation. And if someone isn't hurting you, like physically harming you, and hasn't killed anyone, and hasn't, like, you know, shot anyone, you're going to be more on their side than on the side of the police.
You start to empathize with them, but then you know the police are going to try and Well, yeah, get in and kill them.
So I was thinking about this in the shower. The only thing, right? I had a shower. It's a shower thought.
Okay.
James doesn't ever think in the shower.
No, I switch off.
Meditative silence.
Sometimes I do.
You gotta check on him after a little while. Otherwise, it will just flood because he doesn't switch on, turn it back, turn it off.
I've nearly drowned quite a few times.
The entire bathroom has filled up with water, and
I always put the towel at the bottom of the door first.
Stop doing that.
No one else drowns. That's so kind.
But then it all goes down the sinkhole. That's fine.
Yeah, because there's that little hole in the sink.
Just in case you overflow the bath.
Yeah, that's what it's for. So, okay, put yourself in. Okay, everyone who's listening and watching, and unless you're driving or walking, close your eyes.
Mm.
Okay, you are in a bank. You are a bank. You're a bank customer. You're going in. You're going to take out some money. Don't worry if you don't have any money in your bank account.
Money, please.
Somebody has kindly transferred some money into your account and you're taking it out for just the day. So you go up to the counter and then someone comes in and says, this is a bank robbery. Everyone, please get to the ground and go over there. And then that's it. They lock up the doors and you're now a hostage. They say, okay, put your hands out. They tie your hands and all that. Not too rough. Just tight enough that you can't, you know, get out. They're not doing any lasting harm. And then, you know, they're on the phone to the police and the police are like, well, you know, you can open your eyes now, by the way. The police, they're on the phone to the police, and the police are saying, these are my demands. This is what I want. And the police are saying, no.
No. Yeah.
Now, from my point of view, and I'm genuinely thinking about this, from my point of view, I definitely put the blame on the police who are, like, gambling with my life. Like,
yeah, because you don't ultimately have any care about the bank or the bank not having their money stolen. Yeah. You want to be alive. And the only reason you're not alive is because the police aren't letting the guy get away.
Yeah, I mean, and okay, obviously, like in some cases, like in a lot of cases, they will probably harm people. You know, if they've brought weapons, they're willing to harm people. They will probably do that. But if you're in a situation where they haven't actually harmed anyone, they haven't seriously injured anyone, they haven't shot anyone, they haven't done any of that, then you're gonna be like, yeah, police, just give the guys what they want and let me go.
Well, these guys are nice enough.
Yeah, because like ultimately the real solution, the easiest way to get out of this is give them the getaway car that they want, let them go, and just
then you can go do your little police chase.
Yeah,
once I'm safe, thank you very much, police.
So I can understand being in the position of like, I think it's interesting because I feel like law enforcement would find it difficult to understand that law enforcement bad, because
they're always good.
Yeah, from the view of law enforcement, law enforcement good. But from the view of many other people, law enforcement bad, you know? So there was that there. There is that, and this is from the people that the case is named for. Mm. So I think this is a fair sort of, even though it's one case, I think it's fair to point this one out, that they were genuinely like thinking, oh, well, the police are playing checkers with our lives, direct quote. So it's understandable that you'd have more of an affinity towards the people who are treating you relative to the situation fairly well. Apparently an American journalist interviewed everyone involved in the situation. And that was like probably one of the best views that we've got of how the two groups interacted, the hostages and the criminals. So I've already mentioned one of them, so Elizabeth Oldgren, was allowed to leave the vault that they were like imprisoned in because she was claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And she said that at the time she thought it was very kind of the robber to let her move around the floor of the bank.
So it'd be quite shocking to, well, you don't expect a bank robber to be compassionate, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Or like to be empathetic or sympathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentioned that one of them was going to be shot. So it was Safstrom said that he felt gratitude when the captor told him that he was planning to shoot him, basically to show the police that he meant like he was being serious. But then said that he would make sure he wouldn't kill him and we'd let him get drunk before it, which, relative to the situation, again, fairly nice thing to do.
Seems very nice.
Yeah. I mean, awful thing to do, to shoot someone. But in terms of shooting someone and letting them die and saying, look, I'll let you get drunk and I'll make sure I won't kill you. I just need them to know what, like, I can understand forming more of a bond with this person who seems to be looking out for your welfare rather than the law enforcement who, from potentially your point of view, seem to be sort of almost gambling with your lives and not just giving the people what they want. Because from, you know, from your perspective, you're like, just give it to them. Just give them what they want and let me go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose what it shows is that the person who is doing this robbing, who's allowing you certain things, it shows them to have a level of humanity. Mm. And from your far off viewpoint, you can't see that the police trying to get you out have humanity. They're just defending the law. Now they will have humanity if they're nice people, they may have humanity if they're nice people. I mean, look, my auntie's a police woman and I quite like her. She's all right. But you could at least see evidence of humanity in the captor if they have shown you a certain level of humanity, you know, beyond kidnapping you. But you have no evidence of humanity in the part of the police people who are ultimately making it more difficult for you to potentially get out alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And this is the thing. And it's not just a one-way thing. It's a two-way, it's a sort of a two-way street there. And so again, Stockholm Syndrome was kind of used to explain the feelings of captives towards their captors. But apparently in this situation, the sort of landmark case of Stockholm Syndrome, the one that it was named for, the captor sort of developed stronger feelings for the captives, the hostages.
Wow.
So he said that at the beginning of the sort of situation, he could have easily killed the hostages, but it changed over the few days. So Olsen said this: "It was the hostages' fault. They did everything I told them to do. If they hadn't, I might not be here now. Why didn't any of them attack me? They made it hard to kill. They made us go on living together day after day like goats in that filth. There was nothing to do but get to know each other." So
there was nothing else we could do.
But then here's the thing. This is what I think is interesting. We'll get to this, right? Mm. We'll get to this. In fact, you know what? Save this in your head because we'll get to it in a bit, because I think this is a really interesting little point here. That you can say that there's a disorder here, but these people just got to know each other. Save that point in your head. Put a little pin in it. Save it for later.
Are you going to tell us that's wrong?
No.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But yeah, so, well, here's the thing. Stockholm Syndrome has been about, there's not many things that you can find on it, like actual literature on it, sort of academic things. There is a 2007 article from the FBI Law Enforcement Bulletin that says Stockholm Syndrome is really, really rare. If it does occur, it can be used to improve the chances of hostage survival. Mm. But what that sounds like to me is basically just if you let them be nice to each other, then they won't want to kill them, which is obviously.
Sure. That sounds like that's the most psychopathic thing I've ever heard.
it's ridiculous.
We'll do is we'll make them be nice to each other.
We'll leave up to the hostages to be a bit nice.
That works.
And then in return, they'll get, you know.
Yeah, so we're going to talk very briefly about the development over the years of Stockholm Syndrome. And I have about I've got about three bullet points on this. Basically, the idea of Stockholm Syndrome, it's present both in child and domestic abuse now. Like, that's kind of an idea that we're like, oh, this idea of what we've got for this, the idea of Stockholm Syndrome is similar to the idea of people who aren't willing to necessarily call out or speak against their abusers. But I feel like there's not much on that. There are a few things I've seen on that, but ultimately
it's a survival strategy.
Yeah, well, kind of what the kind of driving principle behind this is that someone who harms you, you can still have positive feelings towards or want to protect. That's basically what that is saying. That's what the link there is. But bear in mind, we don't have diagnostic criteria for Stockholm Syndrome. There aren't a list of symptoms, and it's not in any of the major sort of diagnostic manuals. So if we talk about the sort of idea of Stockholm Syndrome being transferred onto these two sort of things, that's more saying that, yeah, we can see that in instances of these awful things happening to people, they can still show affection towards the perpetrators. And that's basically as far as it's gotten. As I've said, there is very, very little literature on Stockholm Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And the question I want to ask is it actually real? Because that's a lot of what you find when you look for Stockholm syndrome. Is it real? And ultimately, here's the easiest way to sort of think about my perspective of it. Do you remember how I said earlier that that they basically just got to know each other?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Stockholm syndrome is very rare. There aren't strict diagnostic criteria for it. Generally, from what I've gathered from the things that I've read, which could be quite biased because bear in mind, there's very little on this. Stockholm syndrome is more just us trying to find a link between things that don't necessarily have the link that we're looking for. From what's been described and from what I've seen, it seems like Stockholm syndrome is less of an actual syndrome that happens to people and more just people growing close to each other.
Yeah, forming some kind of relationship in a stressful situation.
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite understandable. And it's not necessarily something that you could call a syndrome or put into a diagnostic medical manual. Mm. It's
a happening.
Yeah. And
it's a thing that we observe.
Yeah, and okay, here's the thing. Like, and I'm not the only one that think this. This is kind of coming from the other things that I've read. There's a few articles on this. There's one of the only papers you can find on Stockholm syndrome is on this. So basically, what's she called? So Nadine Caslow, who is a clinical psychologist at Emory University, said there's very little evidence to sort of validate that Stockholm syndrome exists. It's mostly talked about in the media, and that's the thing. It's kind of brought up in the media as it's just the name for when someone who is in a hostage situation identifies somewhat with the sort of with the captor.
Yeah.
I suppose it's almost like the way you're describing it there, it's almost like we, as the way we have been sort of conditioned to think by our society, or at least the media who portray these things, have in some way, it's either an inability to empathize or a lack of will to empathize with the possibility that someone might commit a crime or someone might do something like rob a bank and take hostages for a reason other than they are evil. Like, because that's not something you want to portray. You don't want to portray people who commit crimes as someone who you could potentially be rationally sympathetic towards.
Yeah.
Because then you just, like, the worry is you're then like normalizing crime, right? And so you have to kind of invent there could be other psychological reasons why there's things that spring to my mind as like, oh, here's a weird theory that might be what happens to your brain in this situation when you're faced with your own death. But it's ultimately this way that we have to always portray the person who's taken someone hostage out of desperation as evil, and as you cannot portray them as having any redeeming qualities whatsoever. So when someone has some kind of sympathy towards them for some crazy reason, because they might just be scared, they might be confused, they might be desperate. Nah, we can't talk about that.
To the point where empathizing with them or relating to them on any level must be a delusion.
Yeah.
Yes. Because, a syndrome.
Yeah.
We must diagnose why this person is being empathetic towards this evil monster.
Because I don't think they're evil, but they're empathizing with evil.
It's like what we were talking about. I can't remember what it was. We've spoken about this a few times. That there are lots of different routes to something. So, okay, we've spoken about this before in our, I think... in our, what is it, the gay episode? I can't remember the name of it. The Science of Being Gay. The gay gene.
Yeah.
So we spoke about it in that, I think, where we said that basically being gay is less of, in the context of the episode, it makes sense, so don't take this out of context. We said that being gay is more of a symptom than it is a disease, in that you can't, being gay is not one specific thing. There is not, like, sort of a specific route that leads to being gay. That being gay is just, it could be one symptom seen by any number of sort of eventualities. And the same with this, I would say the same thing is the case with Stockholm syndrome, because of the few cases that I've read about, there seems to be different sort of things that led to it. So in that first case, it seems that they genuinely did empathize somewhat with the captor, because the captor was being relatively nice to them. You know, like, yes, the captor threatened their life, like quite literally threatened their life, but they did so in a way that one wouldn't really expect, in which they did show some sort of concern for the people's personal well-being, in that if you were going to kill someone, just straight up, if you didn't care about killing someone, why would you let them walk around because of their claustrophobia, unless they were making a racket, you know? Unless you just want to shut them up. And in which case, if you just want to shut them up and you were willing to kill them, just use that as an opportunity to kill them. Or if you were going to shoot someone to show that you meant business, if you really didn't care, then why would you let them get drunk and worry about killing them? You know? Unless the person was lying, but from the person's account, the guy who committed the crime's account, it doesn't seem like he was lying about that. So there's that aspect. And I've got this other story of Elizabeth Smart, who was 14 in 2002 when she was kidnapped. And the captors would dress her in a veil and walk her around her hometown in Salt Lake City. Mm. And she had been kidnapped for 9 months. And apparently when she was, sort of rescued, experts were speaking to the New York Times and saying that she didn't try to flee because she'd suffered from Stockholm syndrome. And they were like, oh, capture becomes the nurturer. They're an abuser, but they're also the only person who can take care of you and keep you alive. On speaking to Smart, Smart said basically something along the lines of, you don't need to like them or have, an affinity with them to do what they say. They can kill you. They threaten to kill you and your family if you, because they were walking around in public. They threaten to kill you and your family if you say anything. So why would you run away if you think that your life and your family's lives are in danger? You don't need to be, being compliant does not necessitate that you care about your captors. It just means that you might have other reasons, or you could be paralyzed by fear.
Yeah,
all of these number of, all of these different things. So when I say there's different, that sort of Stockholm syndrome could be more of a symptom, what I mean is that what appears to be Stockholm syndrome, someone agreeing with or complying with their captor, could either be like genuinely just someone empathizing with someone else, someone appearing to empathize with someone else because they are terrified for their life, or any number of things that the media just takes and says, this is Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, I was going to say it's perfectly possible that you could have, for example, your brain could come to the conclusion that your best survival strategy is to be compliant, and so it makes you like the person. I don't know how our brains work.
I don't even mean liking the person. I mean literally, as in it doesn't exist. The person didn't like the person. They were just complying.
Someone watching
from the outside says, oh, they've got Stockholm syndrome because I would run away in that situation.
No, no. All I mean is that, like, in the same way that your brain makes you like a certain food because it's conducive to your survival, it makes you like high sugar foods because it over the course of evolution has deemed eating high sugar content foods to be a good survival strategy, a strategy that's now misfiring in our modern world. Your brain, I don't know, this is an idea. It's not, I don't have anything to back this up with, but like it could be deemed that your best survival strategy is to not antagonize the captor and to try and get the captor on side with you. And so that might manifest in your subjectively just going, like, being friendly and being nice, because on some subconscious level, that's deemed to be your survival strategy.
I don't think that's necessarily a subconscious thing. I think that's something that people would consciously do, to be perfectly honest. I think what you're trying to do is find an explanation for Stockholm syndrome as it's described. But the point I'm trying to make is that Stockholm syndrome, as it's described, isn't really okay. It could happen. I'm not saying it can't happen.
Like, it can appear that way from the outside.
Yeah, it seems like it can happen. But that is a lot of it coming from the media and outside, not from actual studies done on actual cases. There are some studies on things like this, but ultimately, they're not really. There's nothing there that we can say Stockholm syndrome 100% exists. These are the symptoms, causes. This is all that. Like, I understand you're trying to find a reason for people identifying with their captors, but in the example I gave you beforehand, the reason that people identified with their captors is because they thought they were being quite nice to them. They said that themselves. In other cases, this one where people said, "Oh, she identified with the captors." She said, "No, I didn't. They threatened to kill me and my family, so I did what they said."
Yeah,
like, and they were both called.
I pretended to be their friend. Yeah.
And I think the Patty Hearst case, She was, she was kidnapped by revolutionary militants, and it's okay. If they have a political ideology, it's not unbelievable that she was radicalized.
Yeah,
like there. Yeah. I'm just saying that there are any number of other eventualities for that. Like, okay, if someone from Extinction Rebellion, you know, came in and was like, and they did this awful, horrible thing where they're like, okay, we're doing this for the planet and we're taking these hostages until you sort this out. And the hostages were in there and they were like, actually, you know what? I agree with Extinction Rebellion. As soon as the hostage situation was over, they were like, I'm going to join these guys.
Yeah.
And then they went on their way. Like, okay, that's much, I'm sure to people listening, if someone from Extinction Rebellion did that, that would be much more believable that someone would join Extinction Rebellion. But the issue is that when we think of like people doing horrible things, we think that the only time people can do horrible things is if they've got horrible reasoning.
Selfish reason. Yeah,
horrible selfish reasoning. And the fact is that ultimately, if you genuinely think that something is, that and the ideals are horrible because some, because a radical groups, you know, present those ideas in a bad way or do horrible things in the name of those ideas, then you really can't agree with any idea, like any, like school of ideals in the world. Like Christianity is out. That's right out. Islam is out. Sorry about that. You can't have that one. Any kind of left wing thing. Capitalism. capitalism is already
out.
It's gone. That's gone. Long gone.
Dead and buried.
Oh, the British royal family. Sorry, man. That's gone. Oh, Britain. Gone. The most, like, so many, anyone living in any country that is that is a Commonwealth country.
Whole, like, nationalism.
You, sorry, if you're white, then boom. No, I'm joking. But like, my point being that like, Just because someone does something horrible, it doesn't mean that the point that they're, the reason that they're doing it is bad, is a bad reason. And not that their reasoning is good. What I mean is that their, that the
rationale.
Well, no, more so that more so what I'm saying is that someone could be presented with a set of information, and the extent to which they take that could be bad, but that doesn't mean that the generalized stance that they have is the incorrect one. By which I mean, so if someone was, say, if someone, like someone being Christian, right, perfectly fine, someone being a Christian and like Westboro Baptist Church and taking that ideology to the extent of being sexist, racist, homophobic, bad, but that doesn't mean that all Christians are bad just because Westboro Baptist Church are,
because the extreme exists.
Picketing a funeral. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that I personally feel that even if your cause is noble, if you do something, essentially what you're talking about there is for the greater good, you probably need to maybe re-examine that. There are other examples where someone does something like stealing because of something that's not even an ideology. They're just desperate, or life is treating them in an unfair way, or that's deemed to be the most expedient way of getting to the outcome they want, which is security.
I just
want to
be absolutely clear that I'm not saying that it's that just because they've got a noble cause that it's fine that they've done it.
Cool.
I want to be absolutely clear on that. No. There's no for the greater good here. What I'm saying is that
it's not endorsing political violence.
Look, their action is bad, but that doesn't mean that their ideology is necessarily bad. Obviously, the ideology that caused the action bad, but like, it doesn't, you can't write off an entire cause because of extremists within the cause.
I was wondering, this is just a thing that popped into my head. So like, one of the primary functions of your brain, right, is keep you alive. I would say that's a pretty good, pretty low level function of your brain, is like, most of these things are in some way eventually leading to keep you alive or pass on your genes, right? And when you're put in a situation where basically there's like a gun in your face, and you think that's it, you're done. All of the models that you have used to get to this point, to get through life, none of them apply to this situation, unless you like know some Taekwondo or know how to catch bullets or something. You don't necessarily have any models that most of the contents of your brain is pretty much paralyzed at that point. You're just like, right, I don't have any options here, right? The world is presenting in one way, and you don't have any options in the entire contents of your brain with which to do anything in this situation. You are powerless. I wonder if, when placed in that situation, it almost causes like a short circuiting of the brain that goes like where like you have literally no options, and that could cause you to then act and believe and form almost like a new model of the world where you like start from scratch, especially if you're put into a position where you're also, like you said at the start, infantilized. Like you are then put in a situation where you have no choice over what you do, you have to get permission for everything, and you've just been confronted with the fact that you're out of options, you're powerless entirely. I wonder if that has some kind of psychological effect that could then explain some of the examples of what we call Stockholm syndrome.
I mean, that's definitely possible in some cases. I mean, it's similar to what the quote that I'd read out earlier about all of your sort of values and everything have just gone because you've expected you're about to die from the person that's involved in the original one. But I have actually got a very... I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. I've got a quote here from someone who worked with the NYPD for a long time. Actually, sorry, no, let's skip to someone else's quote. I've actually got a quote to respond to what you said.
Oh, okay, interesting. I'm glad I spoke.
And so this was someone that worked for the NYPD for, as I said, 35 years. His name is Hugh McGowan. Now, he said, "I would be hard-pressed to say that it exists. Sometimes in the field of psychology, people are looking for a cause and effect when it isn't there." So effectively what I'm saying, Luke, is that I'm filling in the gaps, trying to jump
between those two gigantic, like I'm jumping over this precipice. I'm like, how can I possibly get from this point with some limited understanding of psychology? I'm doing that big jump and going, maybe this is how.
I think the first hurdle that you're falling at is you're taking it that Stockholm syndrome exists. And that's, I think, the biggest issue in this.
Well, I'm taking it that we observe people to be sympathetic to their captors.
Yes, but I've already explained that we don't necessarily observe that.
Oh, okay.
Because when I said about that,
we observe times when it looks like it, and they were pretending. But there are also times when people genuinely.
No, so that wasn't pretending. So with Elizabeth Smart, it looked like she was complying with that she had a positive relationship with them, not because she was pretending, because she was paralyzed by fear and they threatened to kill her. So when they were walking around in public wearing a veil, she didn't run away, not because she was pretending to be nice to them, because she was too scared to run away. And other people saw that and said, oh, she must be being nice. Mm-hmm. So that's Stockholm syndrome.
That's stupid.
Why
did they think that?
Because we think that Stockholm syndrome's a thing.
Right.
So I'm not going to sit here and say Stockholm syndrome isn't a thing in that captors can't, form a bond with their captors and vice versa. What I'm saying is that there's not really any scientific evidence behind Stockholm syndrome in the way that we believe it exists. And trying to come up with models and reasons for it existing is assuming already that it exists. And trying to come up with a standard model for why in very, very rare cases some people exhibit positive feelings toward their captors is almost flawed in that, there are so many different variables going in there. So the Patty Hearst thing could be incredibly different to the original Stockholm case. And we've kind of got what we've heard what the people from the Stockholm case said. The people were being generally nice to them. The Patty Hearst thing, she went on to commit robberies with them. So there could be, like, there are other variables going on there that we can't necessarily be aware of. This is like, what I'm trying to say is that what people are trying to do with Stockholm syndrome is find a reason to connect things that aren't necessarily connected. They're connected by virtue of the fact that from the outside, it appears as though a hostage has had a positive relationship with their captor. That is the thing that has been observed from the outside. And from that, people have said, okay, so in these situations where hostages appear to have a relationship with their captor, we're going to assume that they actually do have a positive relationship with their captor, and we're going to try and explain why in all of these cases this has happened, when that's really the only connection between them, and that connection itself is spurious. But
Corey, you're forgetting that all the criminals are always the bad guys and the police are always the good guys. I think you're forgetting this very crucial piece of
the law of the universe.
That's so true.
You've ignored one of the founding laws of the universe.
All criminals
all
are
rubber bad.
Bad.
Yeah. Have you all not read bad. Genesis?
Yeah, all criminal bad, especially the ones who are white and drive over the speed limit and say all criminal bad. Anyway, no, look, you don't need to be white to do that, but it's just, I think it's very interesting that the word criminal doesn't necessarily mean someone that has broken the law. It means, because if criminal just meant someone that has broken the law, or someone that has committed a crime, then the word criminal would be very broad. Criminal means someone that the society has deemed a criminal.
Oh yeah, someone who's been convicted, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yes, but not necessarily. Mm. Because one can be, right, there are plenty of people who've been convicted of crimes that we wouldn't call criminals. We call people criminals, not just to say, oh, this person's committed a crime, which is a very neutral thing. We call someone a criminal as a value judgment on that person.
That person is flawed right. and evil. And yes. unfixable.
Okay. Yeah, and if you, yeah, exactly. People, okay, there are plenty of people that have committed plenty of crimes. There are plenty of people that have gotten off from committing crimes. There have been plenty of people who haven't gone to jail for crimes that they have said they, like, we know they've committed. Then we wouldn't necessarily call them criminals. There are, the issue is that criminal here, in the world that we live in, means bad person, as opposed to.
It's used to paint the good, bad. Idea of the world.
Yeah, because
there are good people and bad people.
People like to pretend that laws matter to them, but the only laws that matter to them are the ones that they think, like,
that
sorry,
they're
not
they agree with.
Yeah, people try to pretend that all laws matter and that all laws are sort of like equal, and if you break, and like breaking the law is inexcusable until they decide that they want to break the law because they feel like it.
Until they want a bit of marijuana or something, you know.
Even less than that, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
Breaking the speed limit. Not putting my seatbelt on. Oh, I know it's illegal to do this, but I'll just do a little bit of it anyway.
Pirating a film.
Yeah. Like, things like that. Because, oh, no one gets harmed. But you can't see the situations where other people feel like they have to do that. Like, people are forced into crime by the society that they live in. So I just want to quickly, before we end, talk a little bit more about how Stockholm Syndrome is not necessarily real. So one of the papers I found on this is I'm just going to read you a brief summary of the abstract for this paper, because this is, you know, I could have summarized it all myself, but actually they did it very well, and they even gave me little headings. So basically their objective was to sort of look at all the evidence based on Stockholm Syndrome. So this was a review, by the way. This, I think this was a meta-analysis of other papers. Mm. So they reviewed the evidence for Stockholm Syndrome. And they basically went to PubMed and a bunch of other databases, which are databases for, scientific journals. Papers, which I've used. They searched them all. They compared the features of the cases in English language media to identify common themes which might form a recognizable syndrome. And they found from that, from PubMed, Embase, PsycINFO, and I think CINAHL, I don't have to say that, they identified 12 papers that met their criteria for inclusion. But it's mostly, the literature on it now is mostly case reports, which is basically individual cases. And there is sort of, the use of the term is not definite. They're like, you know, kind of ambiguous, basically.
Yeah.
And there were no diagnostic criteria, and there were 4 common features found between the five cases studied. And basically, what the conclusion they came to was, there's not very much academic research on Stockholm Syndrome, and like, if you look at media reports, there are similarities between well sort of publicized cases. And then they go on to say that might be due to reporting and publication bias. So Stockholm Syndrome could really just be something that's made up by the media. Because bear in mind, if it's not been studied properly, if people think that Stockholm Syndrome exists, right? They'll do what Luke has done earlier. No offense, Luke. They'll do what Luke has done earlier and be like, oh, like...
be amazing.
Yeah.
You'll assume that this person is exhibiting these symptoms, so we'll try and figure out why. Or... like, I think when I said that, and you might have just misheard me, but when I said that the person didn't show any sort of positive emotions toward their captors, they were just terrified, and from the outside it seemed like they were doing that. You heard that as, oh, they're pretending, and it's this bias of people's brains to be like, well, Stockholm Syndrome exists,
yeah,
so they must just be pretending, and that'll be where that comes from. Or like, people find it very difficult to get out of their heads that Stockholm syndrome as a disorder syndrome probably doesn't really exist, because the only evidence we have for it is in the media. And this is the thing. Okay, it could exist, but we don't have any evidence for it, really.
Right.
Other than stuff that has come from media, which has got a lot of bias on it, especially one that believes in Stockholm syndrome. So
I
guess the whole point of this episode was basically just a lesson to be wary about the things that we believe and understand, and try and understand where the information that we get comes from. And also, we've done this quite a few times on previous shows, just to basically just be aware of where bias influences science and influences all of our lives, because it is everywhere. Even in something as seemingly innocuous as Stockholm syndrome, it could be an entire fabrication of bias and people just wanting it to exist.
Fascinating. Wow.
Yeah.
I never thought about
it's
that.
It's not real.
I always assumed it was just real.
Well,
I think it could be real.
Again, so what I'm not saying.
But we've assumed that it's real.
Yeah, I'm not saying that people don't show positive symptoms toward their captors. And obviously, in the cases of sort of child and domestic abuse, there are similar sort of things going on there. But what I'm saying is that Stockholm syndrome, as it is generally described, may not actually be a thing.
Yeah.
It could be a fabrication of reporting bias or publication bias. It could be a media bias that is causing this thing to be perpetuated. And we have seen cases of people showing positive sort of feelings toward their captors. But also we've seen cases where people haven't shown positive feelings towards their captors, but people have assumed that they've got positive feelings towards their captors because of the way that they've acted.
Yeah.
So it's just a case of, this is something that if we want to say that it really exists, we should probably study it in a more rigorous way. But obviously it's a difficult thing to study in a rigorous way because it happens so rarely. And ultimately, again, it's one of those things of it's more of we're looking at from the outside what it appears to be rather than understanding what has actually led to it. So all of the sort of eventualities that could lead to people being showing symptoms of Stockholm syndrome could be entirely different things.
Yeah.
Entirely different. Even the three cases that we spoke about today, very different.
All different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. Stockholm syndrome probably doesn't exist.
Wow.
Yeah. There we go.
Wow. Further study needed.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we finish the show, I do want to just say, before y'all go, probably should have mentioned it earlier, but next week we are having a very, very special episode of SciGuys Live. So after SciGuys Live, what we're doing is we're having another live show wherein all of our patrons can call in to, you know, say hi or do whatever, you know, just have a chat. So if you want to be able to call in, go ahead and go and sign up on Patreon. You can also watch it if you're not a patron, but you want to call in.
Oh, anyone can watch it, but if you want to call in,
yeah.
patreon.com/SciGuys.
Damn right.
Get your ticket.
So thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or find and contact us on SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. You can find me at NotCory everywhere.
Find me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can find me at LukeCartForth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.